This is A View from the Bridge, official podcast of the Belfast Giants for kingdomofthegiants.com. Today is Tuesday, the 15th of December, 2015, and my name is Patrick Smith. Mixed weekend. I keep saying that a lot, don't I? A mixed weekend for the Belfast Giants. 2 points from two away games. Coming up on this week's show.
Here's Benedict. Benedict shoots. Oh, he scored! Huge goal from Brandon Benedict.
Awesome in Altrincham, but stifled in Sheffield. Davey and Aaron will be round in just a moment to talk about the weekend's competition for the Belfast Giants. We look across the league, the incidents with Marsh and the Challenge Cup draw, and we're joined by the man who was on the ice for the Challenge Cup draw and held up that number four puck, Seth Bennett, on this week's show. We answer your questions in the fan agenda and look ahead to this weekend against the Edinburgh Capitals with Ross Dewar of the Edinburgh Evening News. All on this show, which rarely has much trouble with its ball bag, it's A View from the Bridge. And by that, I of course mean the bag that you put the balls into. I don't know what everybody else is thinking. A weekend of mixed fortunes for the Belfast Giants. A lot to talk about. Mr. David McGimsey, how are you?
Paddy, I'm very well. People mightn't realise that we don't just always record this start to finish. We'll clip wee bits in and out, and I've just heard the tail end of the introduction there, which sounds a lot worse than I'm sure it's supposed to be.
Aaron, does it sound bad to you?
Well, I've heard worse. Unfortunately, we haven't broadcast it.
Yeah. Well, basically, I record it, and then you guys don't hear it until you hear it on the show. But it's not that bad. Anyway, listen, let's get on with things. The Belfast Giants this weekend were on the road. The first two games of four games on the road. First up on Saturday night, they went into Altrincham Arena in Manchester to take on the Storm and came out with a 4-1 win. The Giants goals coming two for Lloyd, one for Keith and one for Benedict, and the Storm goal coming from Siska. Matt Nickerson was the healthy scratch in this game, while for the Storm, Folks was back in the lineup, but they still didn't have Davey Phillips. I was at this game. I know you guys have probably seen the highlights, but for me, Davey, it was one-way traffic.
I've watched the whole game, Paddy, and that was the one thing in your whole agenda that I have to accept you were there, and I've only watched it. I kind of disagree. Certainly in the first period, I thought we got a lot of shots on target. We got a lot of shots on Kalemba that a few blocked, with a few off target. But I thought that Manchester actually sort of went punch for punch with us, certainly in the first period. After that, we had Trissonal. We got on top of them. And once the goals started to come, as we sort of predicted last week, once you get a couple ahead against them, they don't chase as well as the lead. And, but as you know, one of the other points you've got on your agenda here, putting Lloyd, Keith and Garside back work right from the drop of the puck. The three of them just know where each other's going to be on the ice, and they bring that energy and they bring that willingness to block shots and the willingness to go into the corners and do the dirty things and make their teammates follow them. You know, set a good example. And you know, if anything was taken out of this game on Saturday night, apart from the points, it was those three guys play so well together.
See, I put that on the agenda because, like I say, it felt to me in the rink, and I know I spoke to television's leader, Coach Russell, I think at the start or midway through the second period, and I said those exact three words, one-way traffic, mate. And he nodded, because it did feel as if the Giants had most of the puck, had most of the pressure, had it mostly in, as if Stephen Murphy had very little to do in the first, say, at least 30 minutes. And then maybe the Storm came into it for about 10, 20, and then the Giants hit back. I don't mean to be disrespectful to what the Storm were doing in that game. It just honestly felt in the whole arena of it that the Giants were dominant.
It's maybe because, as you know, I'm doing the stats and I'm stopping and starting and taking every shot into account, and, you know, quality shots where they're coming from and what, you know, what saves, you know, Murph's having to make and what saves Columbus having to make. And honestly, the first 20 minutes, it's a pretty even split. It was punch for punch up and down the ice. It was a two-way game for the first 20 minutes. Watch it back, you know, if you feel like you've got nothing else to do in your life. But after 20 minutes, once we got the go ahead, you know, when Keith got the go ahead goal, Shortly after they had scored, you know, it was only a matter of second, 20 seconds or something after they had scored. That kind of just knocked the wind right out of Manchester's sails. And I think from then, I would agree with you. After that, it became a lot more one way, a lot more dominant. But up to then, I thought Manchester gave a good account of themselves.
Aaron, what do you think of the game?
Yeah, I think I've watched what you call it, the sped up highlights, maybe would be the best way to describe it, sort of the full game, but at twice the speed. It's kind of like watching the NHL, actually.
Yeah, I'll have to sorry to jump in there. But I always, when I'm watching VLC or whatever, 1.5, 2 times the speed makes for a really entertaining product.
That's not being disparaging to the Elite League, are you, David?
That's maybe what they need to do.
But I have to say, I kind of fall sort of between the points you guys are making there. I think the first period was sort of was fairly even, and then the Giants did dominate. But I think it just showed really that our ability to run four forward lines, you know, it wore the Storm down. I know the Storm have had their injuries, you say Folks is back and so on, but. I think we were just a better side and we just managed to wear them down, and we played quite well and we scored some really nice goals in this game as well. I think the opening power play goal was an absolute, the passing move for it to leave Lloyd wide open was just beautiful. I think it was a good performance, and it was what we needed to do after last weekend.
Beach was taken from the game in the first period. An absolute howitzer from Derek Walser slammed into the back of him. It looked like the back of the knee. I said at the time I'd be surprised if it didn't break a bone. My physiotherapist wife said, no, it'll be a soft tissue injury. He didn't come back into that game. Of course, he came back the next night against the Sheffield Steelers. But, Davey, how much of a loss from the game do you think Beach was?
It's hard to know. You know, we ended up winning 4-1. It was a heck of a shot he took. You know, Walser has absolutely ripped it from the top of the slot.
It was a bullet, mate.
Unfortunately, Beechers caught it in the back of the knee. But just to come back less than, 24 hours later, pat yourself up. I don't know whether he took a jag or whatever and got himself back out there. These guys, league-wide, hockey-wide, it's a hockey trend. You know, footballers don't come back from things like that the next day. Hockey players strap themselves up and get on with it and, you know, take one for the team. And, you know, credit to him. He managed to get himself back on the ice 24 hours later. But, you know, how much did we miss him? Yes, we missed him in the face-off circle a little bit, but he hadn't really started the game. He'd started the game between Forney and Demare, and Desi was taking most of the face-offs anyway. So from that point of view, it wasn't that he was missed that much. Of course, when you're a player of the quality of Chris Beach, one of your leaders, one of your alternate captains, you're going to miss him on the ice. Much like we miss, Colin Shields over the weekend. You miss his passing, you miss his quality. But one thing for me, a guy that's taken a lot of heat over the last lot of weeks, and rightly so, Craig Peacock, really came to the game for me on Saturday night physically. He was getting back into that slot, you know, just down low, around the post, getting shots away there. And he had a much, much improved game for me on Saturday night.
And as much as the Giants were played a good game, the Storm, you could tell by Omar Pasha's response after the game in the post-match interviews, they were not happy with the way that they played.
No, I mean, they got right back into the game, you know, in the first period with a good goal. You know, they scored that goal that they seem to score sort of every week, where they just get in behind the opposition with their speed. And this sort of maybe looked like they were going to come back into it, and it never really materialized for them. And, you know, as we've said, the Giants just ground them down, and, you know, I don't think they were ever really in it. And if you think back to when they were in Belfast a couple of weeks back, you know, where they really did, you know, they got a result and they deserved it, and they played the perfect road game. Maybe they, you know, they have to set up differently because they're at home. Maybe there's different expectations on the home team, and they weren't able to set up the same way, and we got the better of them.
Well, that's it. Grant Tulleman coming down the right-hand side, and then, like I say, his size, his skill, his ability, his speed, was able to fix it through to Siska to put it in the back of the net. Davey, one of the things that Aaron brought up earlier was the Belfast Giants power play and that initial goal. What got me was the actual patience of the Giants to basically just hold the puck, pass the puck, move their feet, and actually manufacture that chance for Daryl Lloyd.
Yes, and the Chris Higgins pass, of course. Mm. Higgy was involved in the move two or three times. He's patient on the puck. you know, they call him the Belfast Datsuk. He plays that keep away game that Pavel Datsuk plays very well. He doesn't let D-Man just take the puck off a stick. He's strong on it. And he presents Lloyd with an impossible miss. You know, all Lloyd has to do is tap it in because all the hard work has been done. And, you know, that is what is missing from us at the minute going forward is a little spark to score. We're not burning down and goes, we'll go on the Sunday night soon enough. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's when you go and look at the stats and you go and look at the scores from the games over the last lot of weeks, it's goals. When you go and you score 4 goals in Manchester, you win. When you go to Sheffield and you keep them down to 2 goals, you should be coming away with something with a team of the offensive firepower we have. So it's just that little spark that we need. And we need it out of more than just Chris Higgins. He's the one at the minute that we talked about him last year as well. He's the one that the go-to guy to when nothing's happening that you need something that he'll produce. We need somebody else to come on his coattails and do the same thing.
Absolutely. Well, the post-game interviews from this game are available at SoundCloud/AVFTB and the highlights available from Manchester Storm TV. The Giants full of confidence from that game. You heard Derek Walser talk about the compete level and how he's proud of how his team competed in Altrincham. They travelled across the Pennines over to Sheffield to take on the Steelers. Of course, the last time they were in Sheffield, they were stuffed in both games. Well, stuffed in the first game and then lost the second game by a tight margin. But Derek Walser wasn't able to play in either of those two games due to a suspension, harkening back to the incident with Vlahovic. He's on the ice this time. However, the Belfast Giants once again took a loss at the Sheffield Arena. It was a 3-1 loss this time. The Giants' only goal coming from Chris Beach, a nice deflection of a Ganzak shot from the blue line. And the Sheffield Steelers goals went to Nelson, DBN, and an empty net goal for Eddie. Brandon Benedict, the healthy scratch in this game. And Aaron, it was a more of a stifled, frustrating performance for the Giants. I felt, having watched the game back, that the Steelers were there for the taking, but the Giants just didn't get involved.
Yeah, it was a very strange game overall from what I saw. It just, you know, you say it was a stifling performance, you know, frustrating from our point of view. I think even from probably a Steelers fan's point of view, they weren't really particularly in the game either. And overall, it was a game that maybe didn't quite match up to the heights that we expect between these two teams on either side. Overall, you know, the Steelers, they got ahead and, you know, they got a couple of goals up. The Giants came back into it. Never really looked like we were going to, you know, get level. And then it was an empty net goal. I think we've conceded a couple of these empty net goals this year where, you know, guys have just thrown the puck out of the zone and it's ended up in the net at our end, which is a bit frustrating. But, you know, it was a shame that our panic tactics didn't pay off.
David, do you feel we lacked the jump?
There's an element of that. There's an element for me watching it again on the night and watching it again that we just didn't put any traffic at all in front of Pinson.
Very much so.
The amount of times he was gloving long range shots out like he was plucking cherries, you know, there was no pressure on him at all. And the goal comes from, you know, a high point shot that is deflected in front. Somebody's in front of him and has taken a deflection and got it past him. And we didn't do it all night long. We just didn't get bodies in front of him. I could hear Neil Russell because you could hear every conversation going on in the building. It was that quiet.
The vacuum.
You know, I can't understand how a building can be so quiet. You know, and then people may level at it, the Odyssey or the SSE. I don't know, but you know, it was very quiet. But I could hear Neil Russell shout, you know, take his eyes, net presence, all those cliches that coach loves. He's right. We didn't do it on Sunday night. We didn't get any business in front of Pence at all, and we made it easy for him. The only time we made it difficult for him, we got him behind. I don't think he's all that as a goaltender. And, you know, that's the big frustration for me. We didn't jump into players enough, and we got stuck in our own defensive zone. And, you know, Sheffield got a good cycle going time after time, and we just couldn't. And that just takes its toll on players as well. And, you know, a very, very frustrating game to watch for me.
Well, that's one of the things that Derek Walser said in his post-game, the fact that we don't get those dirty goals, that we're trying to be too pretty. Maybe that's a fault as well from the Manchester game, because I didn't think that we manufactured a great goal for the power play, but more often than not, we weren't trying to get into the dirty areas and play and try to grind it. We were too busy just passing it around trying to be pretty, and we definitely did that at Sheffield Arena. I think in the highlights as well, there was a shot that was just a shot from the left hand side on the blue line that there was nobody in front. All of our players were elsewhere, and Pince had a view all the way through, and he just had to glove it. And that's just, we need to be a bit more dirty in front of goal. We need to be making it difficult for the goalkeeper to be able to see these shots, and we need to have the likes of Nickerson or Beach or whoever just driving the net and making it difficult, Darren.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. It's a theme that's been running through the season, really, you know, and, you know, we've seen it many, many times where, and I think, you know, Coach Derek Walzer's sort of mentioned it several times where in interviews with myself after games at home, where he'd always talk about how we like to, you know, we take one pass too many or we try to score a really nice goal. But it's funny because, you know, the team, you know, for whatever reason, they don't seem to be willing to maybe get into the dirty places, into the corners and in front of the net and stuff like that. Whereas, you know, it sort of contrasts with, you know, and I'm sure we'll talk about this, you know, there were two fights in this game, so it's not as if the guys aren't willing to get involved physically, you know, in that way. So maybe they need a spark like that to take them in to get involved in it in other ways.
Well, Davey, one of the fan agenda questions that came from Stevie Thompson, he said the Giants are seemingly lacking a spark offensively these last 3 weeks. What change did you make to the lineup to give us a much needed boost? Now, one name that's been floating about in the ether, having been released from Krefeld, is coach's good friend Jeffrey Suez. Is that the sort of, not necessarily him in particular, but is that the sort of player or the sort of player's attitude that we need at this moment to get that offensive spark?
Would I take Jeff Suez in my team? Yes, every day of the week, twice on a Sunday. You know, he's high quality player. We know what he can do. He scores lots of goals and he leads and he has an aura about him. He's just the way he carries himself off the ice as well. You know, people respect him when he walks in their room. And yeah, we're a tremendously loyal club. We always have been. We don't gas players. Not saying that we should even at this point, but yes, I do think a new body coming in might just highlight that, you know, there's so much more this team has to offer. And just when Aaron's talking about, you know, as if I haven't got enough to do in my time over this last lot of weeks, I've been kind of analysing where our shots have been coming from in, you know, the last sort of 4 or 5 games and where our goals are coming from. And our goals are coming from right in the crease. When we get in there, we're scoring goals. And you look at all the shots we're coming from the outside. Now, Sheffield box us out. You know, sometimes you have to credit the opposition as well. Tomo had a very, very disciplined defensive system on Sunday night and kept us to the outside. But you've got to be the one that's willing to get in. Go and do whatever is required to get into that slot and get those goals. And we didn't do it on Sunday night. And on Saturday night, we did. And you know, shots from the outside were getting tips and even people getting in there and getting sticks and getting bodies in front. We've got to be willing to go and get into those dirty areas. The coach is saying it. The players have to buy in that. But to go back to your Suez, sorry for getting sidelined there. Suez would be, I can't see Jeff Suez coming back to Belfast. No, I would assume we've probably looked at him in the summer as well. And, you know, for whatever reason, he doesn't want to come back to Belfast. It's, you know, it's disappointing. He got sort of reamed a bit by Killer after his last game. I don't know whether that's still affecting him or not. You know, Killer was pretty vocal in the press about how poor he had been in the playoff final. You don't know how much that plays on a player's mind, but
is that the attitude though? Is that the attitude of a player that we need? Do we need that sort of power forward, that skillful power forward that sort of takes the game by the scruff of the neck and can turn it on and frighten teams?
Yeah. Yeah.
Are we missing it though?
Oh, are we missing it?
Yeah.
We're missing leadership is a hard thing to say because this is a team full of leaders and full of veterans, but there's no one at the minute. You just go, stats don't lie. There's one of them. Can see coach hitting his big bell over there in Manchester. Him and Pasha probably, him and Pasha are probably sitting in the apartment tonight, you know, they're probably in the arena. It's 11 o'clock at night. Hardest working men I'll dream of. But, you know, he's hitting his big dinger there and that doesn't sound any better. This team is full of leaders and full of veteran leadership. We've said that right from the start of the season, but you know, the big ding, stats don't lie. And if you go over the last sort of dozen games, we're not getting the productivity out of the guys that you would expect. And so it does probably need somebody to come in and grab a game by the scruff of the neck. Do you remember the semi-final of the playoffs a few years back? We're giving Swayze heat there for not coming to the game in the final of playoffs a couple of years ago. But yeah, remember the semi-final that year? Was it 2010?
Yeah.
And he just put the whole team on his shoulders and says, follow me, guys. And they did. And he was man of the match, and he scores the game-winning goal in the semi-final. And the penalty shots, he takes two penalty shots, scores them both. He's just a leader. And we need a leader that's going to do it all. Jeff Swayze can do it all. And I'm not suggesting that Jeff Swayze is the man for Belfast at this time. But yes, I think a lineup change is something that could, you know, benefit us this, at this stage of the season.
Aaron, let's come back to those flashpoints that you mentioned earlier on. We'll start off with Forney and O'Connor. Obviously, the two of them had a bit of a niggle early on in the game, and that transpired into what was both of them got five for fighting. Your thoughts on that? Initially, I'll tell you from my point, and obviously I'm going to take, there might be Sheffield fans listening to this, most notably our good friend Mark Hitchcock, who's going to laugh, but I don't understand from that why O'Connor didn't get an instigator, because it looked to me like Forney wasn't interested.
It was one of those ones which was just sort of to the side of the net behind the play, and the two of them were sort of fencing at each other a bit. And O'Connor definitely sort of was the guy who initiated that particular battle. As you say, Forney didn't look interested. He ended up with basically, I think he had his gloves on for the entire length of the fight until the very, very end. Now, there wasn't a huge amount of punches thrown by either guy, and it ended up as a bit of a wrestling match, so it wasn't much of an event, but I don't think he was interested. But I'm kind of glad to see, you know, we're talking about leadership and sparks and things like that, and that's the kind of thing you like to see. You know, yes, I'd prefer Mike Forney didn't sit in the penalty box for 5 minutes, but every now and again, if a guy, you know, is willing to show something like that, someone who you don't expect it, I think it's a good thing for the team.
David?
You know, it all started, it had been going on the whole game.
Yeah.
Those two had been chipping at each other for the first, whatever it was in the game. It was a fight in the first period, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
It was towards the end of the first period, the fight, only a few seconds left. So they'd been sort of jousting at each other for the guts of 20 minutes. And I think O'Connor comes through the crease and kind of blindsides, Forney a wee bit, and Forney takes umbrage at it, goes back and gives him a cross check or a slash or whatever, which starts it all off. So if you're going to go and mix it up, sometimes you have to be prepared to answer the bell, and O'Connor wanted it a wee bit more than Forney did. But, you know, he hung in there, and the only positive that I'll take out of that is he didn't get hurt. He didn't get injured in a fight or anything. You know, it was the cool down, come back on. Unfortunately, we didn't go on and win the game. But yeah, as Aaron says, sometimes those things can spark a team. I suppose O'Connor's trying to do the same for his side, and it's just glad he wasn't hurt in it.
I think it all stemmed from maybe Forney telling O'Connor that he wasn't the best defenseman in the league.
Don't start me on that, mate. You know exactly where that's going. We'll talk to Seth in a bit about the Elite League films and the video that was put out with regards to Tom Darnell being mic'd up. I thought that was excellent. But Davey, sticking with yourself, Nickerson Debian. Now, I may have been on a bit of a wind-up a hitch earlier on, but there was a level of truth in what I was saying, which was, Debian was having a bit of a niggle at Chris Higgins time and time again, just a bit of a punch here, a bit of a face wash there, even when Nickerson came back to offer him out, Debian shrugged it off. It looked like Nickerson had to force Debian into actually standing up for himself. And when he did, Nickerson gave him two digs to the side of the head, his knees buckled, and he asked for the fight to end. Debian, great player, game winning goal, but didn't really want to be involved in this sort of thing.
No, and was it Higgy he was after?
It was Higgy, yeah.
Sort of sparked the whole thing off. I hate this 2+5+10 for instigating. And Robert Farmer took it the other week against the Giants in Belfast when there wasn't a punch thrown between him and King. It sits a player for a period. It's a nonsense. The 10-minute misconduct, okay, it's the laws of the game, but, you know, that's not a 17-minute penalty. And for me, it's not instigating from, you know, Nickerson. It's enforcing, if you want to call it that. But see, he hasn't gone and begged for a fight, or, you know, if anything, Debian has started the altercation by doing what he was doing to Higgy, and he's coming in to back his teammates up. You've seen this type of thing happen 200 times in the Giants' history. This instigating, it's an easy out for referees, I think, especially when there hadn't been a penalty called all night. I'm going to call you for 17 minutes of penalties for that incident. You know, for me, to get 12 minutes more penalties than the other guy involved in the same altercation who got nothing for Wagon Higge, you know, where was his additional two? And you can, I could live with the misconduct paying for Nickerson and you know, just don't want to talk about it.
Fortunately, mate, that's not how the podcast goes, but we'll move on. Aaron, if you take the empty net goal out of it, right, and I know people said you can't do it, but let's take the empty net goal out of this, and it's a one-goal game. There were no goals in the second period. It's a one-goal game going into the third period. Now, it shows you how tightly these games between the Steelers, the Giants, maybe even throw the Panthers in there as well, with how tight those games were last week. And the fact that no team is gaining any consistency. So what reflection do you think this loss to the Steelers has on the Giants?
I think, you know, whenever you go away, you always, you know, I think if you have a season where you're at at 500 on the road, you'd be pretty happy with that. You know, the caveat of that is you'd be hoping to win 90% of your home games, which is something we haven't done. But I mean, just looking at the standings in the Earhart Conference, you know, there's no team is really running. Well, I suppose the Panthers are a little bit ahead, but you know, the Panthers have won 7 out of 12. The Devils have won 7 out of 13. The Steelers have won 7 out of 13. We're at 6 out of 14 and the Blaze are at 4 out of 10. So, you know, there's nobody within the conference. Everyone is beating each other. And I think that's with the way the league is this year, that's just something we're going to have to live with. But we really need to, I think we need to focus more on winning those games at home and, you know, to beat the Panthers at home. Although we did balance that out by beating them over there. So I think we've improved. You know, it was a much closer game this time than we went over there for the doubleheader. I think we need to start winning some of these games, though, within the conference and maybe trying to push on there. But yeah, you know, I think it's just really a reflection of where the league is. I think it's very, very tight. And one team is going to have to get on from somewhere. And it doesn't look like anyone's going to do it at the minute. But get on maybe a 10, 12 game win streak to push ahead in the league. But the way the standings are, it's just, There's genuinely, I would say, six teams at the minute with a shot of winning the league.
It is an incredibly tight. It's like, I think John O'Billard put it on our three word weekend saying it's the closest league yet. Davey, I'll throw to you a fan agenda question that came from Andrew Endicott saying that win percentage of less than 500 against conference rivals, as Aaron alluded there, is a poor return. What needs to change? Now, do you think it's a poor return at this stage of the season?
It is. To an extent, yes, because, you know, we are where we are in the league. The stats don't lie for the second time tonight. The other teams are playing slightly better than us in the minute. So yes, it is a poor return because, you know, you can't gloss over the fact of, like, it is a very good league. And I see what John O's saying. It's top to bottom very good. There's been close leagues over the last number of years, wasn't it? A few years ago, I think the top two teams level in points and we were maybe third with 1 point behind, you know, so there has been close leagues over the last number of years, but top to bottom, this is really the first time where, you know, Nottingham are top or Cardiff are top, whoever's top, you can go to Coventry and get beat by the bottom team. Going to Edinburgh this weekend is a very, very difficult place to go now. Fife's always hard to go. Dundee are flying. Bray Head, you never know what you're going to get from one night to the next. Steelers have been up and down. They can be the best team in the league one night. They can be the worst the next night. There's just nothing between any teams. And at the minute, we can't get goals. And if we start scoring goals, we seem to have tightened up really, really well defensively now. But that, the flip side is that is we've stopped scoring goals. It's a very, very difficult balancing act because at the start of the season, we're going the Kevin Keegan route. Sorry, Aaron, you know, we're just going to try and outscore you. And we ended up having like 10. Up with backstop. Murphy's getting a lot better. He's obviously getting into better condition. He's starting to see the puck better. He's making better saves. And defensively, we're surrounding him a lot better. We're limiting where good scoring opportunities are coming for the other team. Like, we didn't do anything particularly wrong in Sheffield the other night. We've conceded two goals in the House of Steel, and that's not a bad return. Now, I'm not counting. Generally, you don't count empty net goals. They're empty nets. It's a 2-1 game. It's a one goal game. Right up to, you know, the last minute of the game. on both teams. We could have came back there and tied that game up, and all of a sudden it's a completely different outcome. And it's just one of those things that is a really tight league. You have to take advantage of your home games. Aaron has said there, that is where we need to start. Now, we're on the road for another two games here, so we've got to go and try and get something out of Edinburgh. But once we get back in the Odyssey, we have a few games over Christmas. We'll play the Devils, I think we'll play Brayhead, and then we're in the new year, we'll play a couple of games against Sheffield. They are, if we are going to do anything in this league, and make no bones, they are must-win games. We have to up our, you know, the old cliche, make the Odyssey a fortress again. There has to be a place where teams come and don't take anything away from. Why Edinburgh can do it, why other teams can do it and be so solid at home, and we can't at the minute, I do not know. We have to be better at the Odyssey.
At the SSE. Just to wrap up this section, some of your three-word weekends. Leslie came up with very mixed bag. Liam McSherry, go heartbeat line. And Neil Russell, Marks and Spencers. I will come back to that in a bit. If you want to see highlights of this game, they're on Steelers TV. You can get that on the Steelers website. Right, on to the Around the League section, and this time with a little bit of a difference. Joining us is the Elite League media correspondent and a man who on Sunday night had a bit of public trouble with his balls. It's Mr. Seth Bennett. How are you, mate?
Yeah, not for the first time either. We won't go into that one.
We'll come to the Challenge Cup draw in a bit, but we're going to start off by talking about, well, the Department of Player Safety. And most notably, the Tyson Marsh reduction with regards to his ban. Following a review by an independent panel, the 5-game ban from Dops on the Cardiff Devils defenseman Tyson Marsh was reduced to a total of 2 games. We spoke about this last week. We expected it actually to be increased and not decreased. Now, Twitter went into a bit of a meltdown, mostly from a lot of fans from other teams. I think it was a bit of a disgrace. Obviously, the Cardiff Devils fans were ecstatic. What were your thoughts?
I was surprised, if I'm being brutally honest, when I heard the news came through. I knew what the arguments were going to be within the room. And the Dops perspective, as we put out in the video there, was the fact that it was felt that the check was to the head and neck area, that the initial contact was with the base of the neck. Cardiff contested that. They said they felt the initial contact was through the shoulder. And although there was contact with the head, it wasn't as bad because of that. Now, you can kind of look at this in two ways. I've seen an awful lot of conversations where they've said, well, this gives free rein to anybody for anybody to hit anybody else in the head. I don't necessarily subscribe to that. And I think you can look at it in the other way as saying, well, you know, this is kind of the justice system that people talk about, where if you don't agree with the decision, if you don't agree with the ban that's been given to you, well, the league aren't going to, you know, they're not in a position where Dops will strong arm any panel to make sure that, you know, that ban isn't changed either up or down. It is a completely fair process. And they went in the room, they made their point. The panel, to a man, agreed with what Cardiff was saying. And that's why they decided to reduce the ban from 5 and to 2 games.
Divvy.
I suppose, sorry, Paddy, I come back with a supplementary to say it there. I suppose the thing that a lot of people have spoke about is that there's been no sort of supplementary video evidence or anything. You know, the videos are pretty damning out there. Like you've said yourself, you looked at them, you're surprised that his ban's been reduced. To me, it looks like a hit to the head. They've gone into a room and they've convinced 4 people or however many was on the panel of ex-players and whatever, that it wasn't a hit to the head. That there has been no supplementary evidence brought out by Dops or by the Appeals Commission to say, this is why the ban's been reduced. They've just said, oh, well, we'll reduce it from 5 to 2 because it wasn't a hit to the head. But the evidence suggests otherwise. Is there going to be evidence coming from the appeals panel to say, well, this is why we've changed that decision? Is it going to be transparent?
There will be. I'm still waiting on receiving the official copy of that. And also, the other thing you've got to remember is in the 2 years that Dops has been running, or less than 2 years, but you know, we're in the second season right now, this is only the second incident that's been appealed from memory. The first one was an absolute mess because it was the Riley Emerson situation where there was no footage whatsoever. And Scott Neal got that big ban that he received. Do you remember at the start of the season?
Yeah.
Got it reduced down on appeal. Now, this is a little bit different. Of course, it's Simon Kirkham's first time going through this process as well. So I think everybody's trying to work out exactly what should happen. And, you know, do we put a video out after that? Do we put the evidence out that, that Cardiff showed the panel? Again, I've not actually seen the evidence that Cardiff have shown the panel yet. I've been promised that it'll be sent through to me by Todd Kelman, so I've got absolutely no reason to doubt him. And if that's in a form that we can share with people that helps with the situation, then I think it's worth doing. But if it doesn't help, you know, if it isn't clear from the video evidence, and a lot of what, a lot of the reason why they changed the ban was part of the rest of a, you know, it was an hour long presentation, or certainly they had an hour to make the presentation, but it was a pretty lengthy presentation that Cardiff put to the guys on the panel. Then I think that's a lot more difficult, isn't it, to distill, put out there without people still saying, well, hang on a second. If you only take a snippet of it. So I can't give you a yes, and I can't give you a no answer to that one. When we get the, when I receive the evidence, then that'll be a judgment in the media department that we make as to whether we're going to try and get something out there that helps the situation and explain the situation. You know, if we can't do that, then for this, you know, for this one, unfortunately, we won't be able to do it. And we'll look at, if we have to cross this bridge again in the future, we'll try and make that a bigger part of what happens. And, you know, I wasn't at the disciplinary hearing. Maybe that's something that we need to do. You know, maybe the media department needs to be there to go and make sure that when the decision's reached, we're passing on the right kind of information that you guys need, and everybody else league-wide needs to be able to, you know, understand why they've made their decision, whilst at the same time trying to protect their identity. Because as you all can imagine, if you were one of those four people on Thursday evening or Friday morning, you know, you would be wondering why the hell you'd bother giving up your time to come and help the Elite League out.
Where does this leave the process, Seth? Because you have a, you now have a situation where the referee's decision on the ice can be overruled by that of DOPS, while DOPS itself can now be overruled by an independent panel. So does this go on and on, or is this a you know, a dead point? Because especially considering how surprised everybody was by the reduction in the ban, and not really knowing what precedent that sets, where do we go from here?
Well, there is one step above, of course, the panel, and that's the Court of Arbitration for Sport. So yeah, should anybody feel that strongly about it, you can take it there. But you know what? We're the same as every other sport in this respect. If you're, you know, you want to take football as the example, referee makes a decision, or doesn't make a decision, say. They then go and look at it on the video. They give him a ban at a later date.
Yes, but that on that, sorry, just on that point, if the referee does make a decision, puts it in his report, or gives a yellow card, then the FA stick by that, as opposed to DOPS, who would, as we saw with the Craig Peacock hit, he got 2 minutes, that gets overruled and he gets a ban. So
yeah, but it's a slightly different system, because, you know, one of the things they're not trying to do in football is they're not trying to deal in player safety. You know, that's the main reason that they're in place, if you like. So what they're trying to do is, yeah, if a referee misses a glaring act of violent conduct, that's when they'll come. But if you follow my point through, is the FA then gives a 3-game ban, the player then can choose to appeal it, and the appeals commission can then reduce it or do whatever they like with it. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the situation we're in there. And once you get to that point, where do you go after that? Well, you know, you can't really go anywhere. You just have to, everybody sucks up the decision. And, you know, maybe in future, DOPS has to put its case forward in a better way, for the panel. Maybe that they've got to look at different ways of that whole thing. But as I say, like, this is very much in its infancy. And until you've gone through the process a few times, it's quite difficult to make sure that everything flows in a way that everybody would want. And everybody knows, right, this is going to happen, that is going to happen, that's going to happen, and this is the outcome we're going to get at the end of it. And this is how we're going to satisfy everybody once we've gone through that. As I say, this is the first time I've been involved in any of these things. So, again, it's just about learning from the process of this one and making sure that if we have to go through this again, that it's done better next time around. But going back to your point as well on, you know, whether or not DOPS should or shouldn't overrule referees, you know, the way it's been set up and the reason it's been set up will mean that occasionally those decisions on the ice are overruled. At the same time, though, those decisions guys are quite often backed.
Seth, you talked a bit about appeals and so on there, and just to go back to an incident we had with Belfast earlier in the season, and it was one that sort of had a few people a little bit angry and wound up. The Daryl Lloyd Slewfoot incident. And the footage that emerged, you know, a bit later and so on. With regards to appeals, you know, I know that I think there's time limits and so on, but people, maybe the public, aren't aware of these time limits and so on. Is there any sort of hope that we're going to get a bit more explanation of these time limits and so on?
I suppose that's something that we'll look at doing. As I say, like this appeals process isn't new, but it's only once you start to use these things that you work out all of the kinks, if you like, to make sure, well, hang on a second, that didn't quite work. We need to be clearer on this. We need to be clearer on that, you know. And it's that realization that as you go through the process that you go, okay, yeah, that isn't quite worded right. So certainly, and I've got to be brutally honest, I don't know exactly what the timeframes are for the appeal. So I don't want to throw kind of an arbitrary date or a number of days out there that people may seize upon and decide that, you know, forever smash me over the head with it on Twitter when I happen to have made a mistake on that. But, you know, that's the one thing that is for sure with all of this, that you can, when you do go to an appeal, it's about when you lodge your money. And then from there, it just depends how long it will take to get a panel together to be able to hear it. And that was, again, that was one of the problems with Cardiff. I think there was one date that it was meant to be on, which I think was the Saturday, actually. And then there was a sort of a lot further down the pecking order, if you like, there was a realization that you can't have it on a game day. Mm-hmm. And that was something that was brought to everybody's attention. So the panel actually at the last minute changed because one of the members couldn't get up there in time for that Thursday date. So at sort of 24 hours notice. And so these are all the little things that are going on behind the scenes that people don't know about. And again, you know, as I say, this is Simon's first time going through the process. So a lot of that is for him to work out, okay, how to do this better next time around. And that's, you know what, that's with everything that you do, isn't it? When you guys do this podcast, I'm sure at some point you sit down and you think, right, well, this week was good, but how do we do it better next week?
We think that most weeks, mate. we'll skip on from Dobson. But actually, before we skip on from Dobson, like you say, hopefully over the next couple of weeks, this will become more apparent with regards to Tyson Marsh and the reasons behind it. What I do want to...
Paddy, what I will say, though, the other thing is, you know, it's, you know, at what point do you just kind of say, well, look, we've got to move on? You know, that's the other thing we think, that it's quite easy to get caught up within a social media bubble, where you're thinking, oh goodness, we've got to get something out there. We've got to come back to that. And in 2 weeks time, you know, going back to it then, does it just cause another Twitter storm that nobody really needs? Or do you look to just say, well, look, it's happened, it's gone. That was the decision then. But next time we make sure we do it better. I don't know. I take
your point, Seth, but what about like gaining understanding from the fans? Because I agree with you that these things could roll on and you don't want them from the razor head. But obviously if something was to happen, say in 2-3 weeks time where there isn't a review or the review doesn't come through and we don't actually have an understanding at this point of why and how, then in a couple of weeks time, if something similar happens and it doesn't happen the same way.
To be fair, Paddy, I think I've explained why. I've come out here and this is one way of doing it, is saying, look, this is what Cardiff argued. This is what Dops argued. And I think from that, you can take what the panel saw from the evidence that they were given. And with due respect to everybody else, that's kind of their decision. And when an FA panel goes in, they don't have to come out and explain overly. You know, they don't have to show all the extra evidence that they reviewed. They review the evidence, they give the decision, and then they move on. However, what I'm saying is, if the evidence is so compelling that it makes the panel's decision obvious just on the strength of the video, then, yeah, definitely we should put it out there. If it doesn't, and it's a lot more complex than that, then we have to try and explain this in other ways, like coming on podcasts like yours and saying, like, well, here, These were the things they considered, and this is what they came up with. And the problem is as well, when you have an independent body where you don't necessarily want to out the identities of these people, then it makes it hard because you can't get them to come forward and talk about it because mm-hmm. it's not within their interests. You know, you can't get the league to talk about it. You can't get DOPS to talk about it because they're one of the parties. So you do end up kind of in this really awkward situation where, you know, there isn't an obvious voice that can come out and explain what's happened. And, you know, I guess I'm the fall guy in this respect, and I have to come out and explain the decisions.
I don't envy your mobile phone when such a thing happens, and it probably goes nuts on Twitter.
Yeah, absolutely.
Quickly moving on, one of the things that took place as well on Sunday night with regards to the Sheffield Steelers Belfast Giants game, and we mentioned it earlier in the show, was you put a mic on Tom Darnell, and we got to hear and see regards to the fight between Ben O'Connor and Mike Forney. Was this just a one-off, or is this a sort of an example of just to show what's going on the ice, or is this something you're hoping to bring forward?
It's not something that we're going to be able to do every single week. However, what it is, I'm going to make a feature around Tom Darnell, around that game, around the refereeing, which will go out a little bit later on this week. And it's going to be just trying to show. I mean, one of the things that you guys have been critical of is the way that the officials deal with the players. Mm-hmm. And so we thought it would be quite a nice idea to talk about, you know, aspects of officiating. How important is communication? What is good communication? How do you communicate with players on the ice? So Tom does a great interview explaining a bit more about that. Then we've got we've got the whole game somewhere in there. And there's some brilliant interest. I've not heard all of it yet. I'm still sort of plowing through the edit, but you got a whole game, and there's one terrific little bit where at the end of one period, one of the players has absolutely beasted the referee. You can just hear him just a little way off in the background. There's a problem with a stick or something like that, and gone. Start the next period as they skate back out onto the ice. The player comes up and he just has a little word in his ear, and he says, "Really sorry about that. I got completely over the top. I was just trying to get my stick, and then you got in the way of it or whatever." And there's this really nice exchange where there's an apology and a bit of an explanation, and the pair of them kind of pat each other on the back, and they go their own separate ways. But I think it's great. You know, it's great for me to be able to hear. I'm sure it's great for everybody else to hear somebody like Tom Darnell, who is a really good communicator. And, you know, even Coach Walser after the game was full of praise for what the referee did over the three periods. So it's got to be a good day for refereeing.
Especially if Coach Walser thinks so. One last thing to talk about, Seth, and that was the semi-final draw that took place on the ice at the Sheffield Arena after the game on Sunday. The semi-final draw ended up with semi-final one being the Clan or the Panthers will face the Steelers or the Flyers, while the Storm or the Giants will face the Devils or the Stars. The draw was made out of...
You did that so much better than me, Paddy.
Thanks, man. In fairness, I do have it written down. But the... let's get into this a little bit, mate. The draw took place out of a Marks and Spencer's Bag for Life, and you drew out the number four was drawn out twice. What happened?
First of all, I'd like to point out to everybody that said on Twitter, the bag was not plastic. The whole point of a black bag for life is
recyclable.
It is made of quality material. in truth, what happened? I was asked whether we could do the draw for the semi-final by the guys at the top at one of the games before Christmas, so the teams can start looking at when they can possibly slide in the fixtures in the new year, start talking with all their various with one another, but also with the various different arenas they deal with. I said, fair enough. How about we do it before the Sheffield Belfast game? I'll be there. We can do it on the big screen. We'll do it before the Man of the Match awards. Fine. I get there on Sunday night, and although it's not the premier thing on my mind, we were making the feature with Tom Darnell, and it just kind of got pushed back to the back of my mind a little bit. Go down at the end of the second period and go to look for the bag of balls that we used last year, and I couldn't find them. So get directed around eventually. End up finding three of the four balls. I was like, running out of time, give me four pucks. I took four pucks, wrote the numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, threw them in the bag, ran back round, ran upstairs, went and did the commentary, ran back down at the end of the game, grabbed the bag, went out onto the ice, and the rest is everything you've seen. Now, the problem came. I've said to the two guys, guys, there's four pucks in the bag. Just grab a puck. Yeah. Daryl Hay put his hand in the bag, came out with a number four pool ball, which I can only assume was the missing pool ball that they couldn't find earlier when we were running around trying to find it. Anyway, I've asked Benny what his number was. He says number two. I've asked Daryl what his number was. He says it was number four. Benny puts his hand in the bag, and thank God he draws out the number four puck. If he then shows it to me, and I have one of those out of body experiences where I'm just like, what? But Daryl just drew out the number. And I look round and I see there he is holding a billiard ball, a pool ball. And I'm just going like, well, what the hell do you do here? I mean, what do you do? I mean, it's just one of those things. It should never in a million years happen. And it makes the league look stupid. It makes me look absolutely ridiculous, dying on my backside in front of 5,500 people. And I'm like thinking, and you've got, obviously, you've got no time to make a decision as to what you do next. So the only thing I could think of doing was to take the puck, show it to the camera, show that it was the number four puck, and then you move on. Was it ideal? No. Was it, can I guarantee you that there was no skullduggery, that there was no making up of the draw or massaging the draw so certain teams came out of the hat? I can 100% promise you that, because you saw exactly what happened. I mean, of course, the thing that goes through your mind is like, well, the number four comes out. Do you just say that that's one of the other teams? But of course, you can't do that. You've just got to be honest. And I think that's what we did. I've taken my fair share of licks and smacks and cracks. I'm sure one of your any other questions tonight from everybody else will be, am I going to resign?
I can't say, are you going to resign? We have had a few comments through. A few of the three word weekends that include holy puckballs. Television's Neil Coach Russell with Marks and Spencer. And Poppy with Bag for Life. I think initially, like, it did look like a bit of car crash TV, but now people are looking back on it. It's looked at back at quite humorously. Though there is always still this question about the Challenge Cup and how it's treated. What do you think of Challenge Cup as a competition? Do you think is this just another in the long line of mistakes with regards to the Challenge Cup?
Well, for me, the Challenge Cup, it should be the second most important trophy within British ice hockey, because it is the second hardest to win. You know, you've got the league title where you've got to play all of those games, and you've got the Challenge Cup where you play all of those games. You've got to get through your group stage. You've then got to win, you know, four games to get to the final before you get the opportunity of a one-off showpiece event. I actually think as well, from a TV perspective, you're more likely to get mainstream TV coverage of the Challenge Cup than you are of either the league or the playoff finals weekend or the playoff campaign, because they're just not long enough. You know, the playoff finals campaign and the league is potentially too long, but you could sell the concept of the Challenge Cup to a broadcaster. They would get on board with that. They would understand that. So I could see the direction that the league goes with that, maybe taking that out, giving it to a broadcaster in the future, and the Challenge Cup becoming, you know, kind of a bigger deal in the way that it is in rugby league terms. And in a way, you know, those of us that are a little bit older will remember the old Autumn Cup or the old B&H Cup as it being a real sort of showpiece event for the sport. And for me, if I was the one that was organising stuff, I'd want to see September only Challenge Cup fixtures. Mm-hmm. Quarterfinals in October, semifinals in November, and the final on a Sunday in December. That's what I would love to see. Get it all over and done with before Christmas, and then you've got a chance to focus on the second half of the campaign from there. Logistically, that's really difficult to do, so they tell me. But I think that kind of thing, even if the final's in the new year, I think that would be very good for the sport. And, you know, I think that, you know, if you're not in the Challenge Cup final, you don't care. You could give a toss, could you? But when you are there, then it is a very, very important event. And, you know, hopefully it will grow a little bit in the next 3 or 4 years with the league.
And on that note, Seth, thank you very much for joining us. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Gents, just a couple of more issues from the weekend, a couple of games to highlight. The Nottingham Panthers, 2 points from 6 in their road trip to Scotland. They lost 5-2 both to Dundee on Friday and to Fife on Sunday. The only 2 points they got was from a come-from-behind victory. Brayhead couldn't hold on to their 3-0 lead, and the Panthers pegged them back and over and forced it to overtime, subsequently winning on penalty shots. After the loss against Dundee, they cited an illness to Mika Vickman on Friday, pulling him in the game, but he returned the game against Fife and lost there. Davey, not a good weekend for the Nottingham Panthers.
No, and highlights what we talked about earlier in the show, that Scotland is a hard place to go. All those teams up there, Dundee, are doing very well. You know, the cynic in me would say Neil Black has told Brayhead to give the big boys some points, and you can get them in, back in Edinburgh the following night. But Fife, difficult place to go. You know, 2 points out of 6 up in Scotland on a road trip isn't the worst return, but when you're the Nottingham Panthers, you're going to be expecting better. I'm sure they took seen Aaron Lord crying into his pint on Sunday night about it, and
Brayhead responded to the Nottingham choke by hammering the Caps 10-2 in Murrayfield. Not before Tristan Harper decided to voice his displeasure at being left on the bench. The British forward posting a picture of himself on Snapchat, drinking and bemoaning having only one shift in the game, saying, bleep, live life. Aaron, Lee Esters and Jordan Kearney have left Brayhead this season. Are they having trouble holding on or keeping the Brits happy?
Well, certainly seem to be. You know, we've seen a few of them leave. And we've heard comments that they're maybe not getting the ice time they deserve. You know, and at the start of the year, one of the things Brayhead sort of really pushed was with their CHL involvement and the number of players that signed, how they were going to be able to roll the four lines. But it seems that maybe, you know, we've got into the thick of the season. Brayhead have been losing a few games that we maybe didn't expect them to, and now they're, you know, the coach, is he relying on his top guys too much and not allowing some of these guys to, or British guys to play as much as they maybe hoped?
Interesting your take on that, Davey.
I'm pretty much the same as what Aaron has said. We've said right from sort of August, September time that one of Finner's Achilles heels could be trying to run four lines and just how he would get everyone the ice time that they want. These imports come in and they want to be playing 25 minutes a night, you know, 20 plus minutes. They don't want to be sitting out while, with the greatest respect to him, Tristan Harper, Lee, as there's these guys eat up 10 or 15 minutes on a night or even 10 minutes. These guys get one shift and they're at these places for a reason. And it's so unfortunate that they're not able to earn your ice time. And if Tristan Harper is doing it, he'll get his ice time. And it's just, it's a conundrum for Finner how he goes around this. You know, that to me, Tristan Harper hasn't left himself an awful lot of, you know, space to manoeuvre there. He's came out, that's basically a finger up at your coach on the internet. It's a difficult situation. I'm sure training was interesting for him this morning.
The only one shift at the weekend. It is going to be difficult for the Brits. It'll be interesting to see how Tristan Harper's been dealt with, because obviously over the last couple of years he's been not a bit part player. He's actually been quite involved in the Brayhead clan setup. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, it's something we saw a wee bit with Mark Morrison, you know, whenever he was in Belfast as well. You know, he saw his playing time sort of decrease, but I suppose the way he dealt with it was much more professional, and you know, he never really came out and complained. He just got on with it, and that's what you need to do in that situation, I think.
In the battle of the BFFs, Davey won with Mark Lefebvre, his Dundee Stars beating Omar Pasha of the Manchester Storm. The Stars getting a 4-point weekend. While Cardiff Devils and the Coventry Blaze had a series home and home, always feisty between the two of those. Cardiff coming out top in both, 2-1 in Coventry and 4-1 at the BBT. Cardiff looking strong, while Coventry are still struggling, despite the fact they've now brought in former Dundee star James Isaacs. Should have said that to Seth, despite what the Elite League site said initially.
Well, just one thing that obviously came out of the Coventry Cardiff game in the big blue tent was the Vlahovic incident, which isn't shown on the highlights. It just shows Vlahovic absolutely feeding Doucette his dinner. But you know, the allegation there, it's not an allegation from me, from Dops, have said there's a spitting incident and there was water thrown over a fan, although I believe Vlahovic went and found the fan afterwards and apologised for it, but it seems to have all kicked off. So look forward to that Dops video coming out tomorrow.
It will be good.
I have to say as well, I mean, the game in Coventry was covered on Premier Sports on Saturday night. Again, and so I managed to sort of to catch a bit of it. And the Blaze were actually a bit unlucky, you know, in the third period, they were all over Cardiff. So, you know, it just shows, I think, that they're starting to make a few improvements and are probably going to be a dangerous side down the rest of the season.
Always a feisty series, the games between those two. I know I saw a few things on Twitter, people saying that rivalry is back. And it'll be interesting to see how that goes forward. Right, time for the fan agenda, where you ask your questions in association with our friends at Belfast Giants TV. First up, good friend Alex Kunovich, what are your thoughts on the Giants D-men? Five new to this team this year. And he doesn't hear much on the podcast of us talking about Adepam, Wilson, or Ganzak. I'll start with you, Nick Davey.
Do you want me to critique them?
Yeah, he basically says we don't hear much about Adepam.
Johan Adepam for me has been... All right. Well, Johan Adepam for me has been a real steady influence. He is that stay-at-home man that we need. He's the one guy who's sort of, I suppose, defensively responsible, would you like to call it, put it that way? You know, yeah. He's much more, likes to stay at home, look after the shop, look after Stephen Murphy when everybody else goes up to try and get their points. Mitch Ganzak for me has been at times a bit windy, but a lot of times he's shown that he's ready to get involved in anything physical going on. He's produced points at crucial times. He gets involved in the rush a lot. And who was the other one you mentioned there? Mike Wilson.
Mike Wilson.
Has been as close to Mike Burgoyne as we have. Remember him? As close to Mike Burgoyne as we've had in a lot of years. I don't have the stats in front of me, but I'm sure Wilson must be getting close on 20 points for the season. He's been involved a lot in power play situations. And those three guys have been really top signings for me.
Aaron.
Yeah, you know, I would agree with Davey, you know, about Adepam especially. He's been the real sort of steady guy, the rock at the back. But, you know, I think even he's getting caught up in the sort of the offensive side of the game. I remember, I think it was in one of the Nottingham games that he was the first man into the zone and behind the net, battling for the puck in the corner. So I'd prefer not to see him doing that again. I'd like to see him sort of just staying back there and playing that role. You know, Wilson actually has impressed me as well, just his ability to get forward. I think, as a unit as well, I mean, if we've signed the six import D-men, but in the last few weeks, we've sort of, well, on a lot of occasions, we've sat one of them. We sat Mason for a couple of games. We sat Adepam. We sat Nickerson at the weekend. And I think the balance, I think, shifts whenever it's a five-man system. And I think it's tricky having to make those adjustments game to game, and I think that's partly what's causing us a few of those problems that we've been having at the back.
I think on my take on those D-men myself, Adepam I think has been solid. I've really enjoyed it. I spoke weeks ago about how I enjoy watching how D's set up, how structured they can be, and Adepam is that guy who is solid and a rock. The Ganzak, I like, he's a bit feisty. He was the guy who shot, it was tipped by Beach in front of goal, and he does throw them in. Whereas, like you say, Davey, and Aaron Wilson's as close to Mike Burgoyne as we've had in years. Burgoyne, who took the puck up in the defensive zone and seemed to be like two or three pushes on the skates, his head being up and looking for the pass. Wilson doing that as well. I agree with you, Aaron, the balance of this D has changed, and balance overall, when we play five D men, how do you flip between the two of them? I spoke about that a couple of weeks ago. Is it right to be sitting a D-man when we've only got six? Now, has it hurt us? It didn't hurt us in Manchester, but and we played 6D in Sheffield and we didn't win the game. Is it flitting between these two systems? To use Derek Walser's own term, is that what possibly is hurting us, Davey?
I think the coach... And we talked about this last week because we had a mixed bag of results as well. You're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. You know, he sat out Matt Nickerson on Saturday night and we'll get the win. And it's a stroke of genius. You've brought Jeff Mason back in for his speed. He's got assists. He's played well. Looks like the right decision. Then Sunday night we've gone with the 6D and we've sat out, you know, an informed Brandon Benedict. I'd like to know the rationale behind that. You know, was that a decision maybe Benny, you know, put forward himself to make it a bit easier? The coach has obviously said he's having just that, you know, his one real difficulty is picking who to sit out at this stage. And, you know, has Benny gone and said, well, look, I was supposed to be the odd man out here, coach, you know, you signed the roster, play your best roster, and we've ended up on the losing side. So it's very, very difficult for a position that Derek Walter's in. Is that jumping about affecting fluidity? Is it affecting just momentum and stuff? Yes, probably to an extent. These guys will be used to, you know, playing with different lineups every night through their careers. There'd be, you know, healthy scratches in all the clubs will have came through the ranks, and something you just have to deal with. Maybe, you know, dropping Benny out when he's been playing so well maybe just wasn't the right decision, but hindsight is 2020 vision, as they say.
Absolutely. Moving on, one last question, and a very good one in my opinion, one from Tommy Brown at Tommy Wizard. I'll start with you, Aaron. It's very simple. Mike Compan, Dustin Whitecutton, or James Demarai?
I think it's hard whenever you're watching James Demarai week after week to sort of look back to the other guys, and the one who's sort of in possession, as it were, it's difficult to look past him. I think to me, he's the most impressive of all of them. So I'd go with Demarai.
David?
It's not as straightforward as a one-word answer there, or as a one-pick answer, because the three of them, all, although they're, you know, quality, top veteran centermen, all bring something slightly different, albeit they all bring similar kind of goals and assists to the team. You know, Whitecutton was playing in a team that was absolutely flat. And he had the likes of Jeff Swayze and Surratt scoring the guts of 40 goals, you know, and last season Compan had to carry a lot of the burden, especially his injuries. And, you know, he played through injuries himself in a team that was really struggling. And James Demarai is just, he is all that. He is skating ability and his puck handling is absolutely tremendous. But, you know, if I had to pick one of them, which is, I suppose, the question, Dustin Whitecutton was the MVP for the league for me, you know, along with the likes of Swayze that season. So, I'd pass Whitecutton.
I think I have to agree with you. I do enjoy watching James Demarai play. I think the way he skates, he's just a fantastic hockey player to watch. Absolute delight watching him in Manchester, even on that small ice, how he bossed it. He just couldn't be touched. And yeah, a superb player. Mike Compan, difficult season last season. He was a standout player in a team that didn't really get started, but he was one player who really stood out. But Dustin Whitecutton, as our former colleague, TV's Neil Russell, said, you know, does all the small things well. And he was able to be a shining star in the league. And yeah, Whitecutton for me. Thanks for the questions.
I think we have to point out, however, that Demarai gets bonus points for having the greatest parody Twitter in the history of Elite League Hockey.
It is a very good parody Twitter. It is very enjoyable. That's it. Thanks for setting the fan agenda. Remember to keep them coming through the week using hashtag TFA on Facebook and Twitter. Right, let's look ahead. Edinburgh Capitals trip to Edinburgh, the Christmas trip to Edinburgh that's been missing for the last number of seasons, and it is back. The Belfast Giants travel to Murrayfield on Saturday and Sunday evening at 5:30 p.m. for both games. The Caps, well, they've only had 3 wins from the last 10. And despite improved performances, the Caps' recent form leaves a lot to be desired. But is that really reflective of the changes at Murrayfield? I asked Ross Dewar of the Edinburgh Evening News for his thoughts. Quite a change in style with the Edinburgh Capitals this season, with Riley Emerson being in charge. Has that been really noticeable on the ice, do you think?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It was fantastic just to have such an attacking flair to the team. You know, they were scoring loads of goals and the fans were loving it. It's just unfortunate that the wheels seem to have come off over the last couple of weeks. I think the cavalier attitude of the team has maybe caught up with them a bit, but it has been really good, and Riley's a hugely popular figure in Edinburgh.
Yeah, obviously he came in last season, and Edinburgh Capitals over the last number of years since they've come into the Elite League, with all due respect, have been maybe not hitting the heights that they'd want to hit. Do you think with Riley involved, the targets have increased, the targets have got higher, and that you maybe able to fight a bit more within that Gardner conference?
Well, that was definitely the idea behind it. I think the spending on the team this year is up significantly from when Richard Hartman was in charge, you know, which was a major hamper for it really was difficult for Richard to be competitive sometimes in the budget he had. And Riley has had a bigger budget to play with, and we have got some great players in here this year. And yeah, I think the playoffs were the goal, and to do it with a bit of style as well, and it was looking good. It's just, it's bizarre. The last couple of weeks have been difficult. They've lost a great player recently in Craig McCallum. He's decided to hang up his skates, which was a strange one. He was doing so well. And we also lost Everett Sheen early in the season. And that's a worry to fans. I think we're the only team to have two players who've effectively walked out. It's not like we've released them. Nobody else has had a player leave the club like that this season. So that is a worry for fans. And we're just hopeful that that's the end of that this season.
You mentioned those two guys, but you've also got the likes of Ryan Hayes, who's really been a standout player in the league this season. He must be a joy to watch.
He is. He has been fantastic with his goals, and his compete level as well has been great. And apparently he's a good leader in the dressing room. And, you know, Riley's full of praise for the guy. But the problem is, I don't want to be negative. I wish we'd had this interview last week, and I wouldn't have had a bad word to say about anyone. But the problem is, we've got a top scorer in the league, but when you're conceding 10 goals at home, we did on Sunday, what's the point of having a top scorer in the league? You're not going to win any games. So everybody on the Edinburgh Capitals team this year needs to take as much pride in keeping the puck out of their own net than they do in trying to score, and that's not been happening recently.
How have the fans reacted to how things are going at the moment?
It's been quite badly, because things were going so well. I was actually thinking about it today, because I knew I was going to speak to you, and I thought, well, actually, things aren't that bad. I mean, we're eighth in the league. They've lost three games in a row, two of which have been away from home. But it feels like we've lost so many more than that, just because of the manner in which they lost on Sunday. It was so bad. It was one of the worst Caps performances I've ever seen. And that's really knocked the fans for six, and we really need a reaction against you guys at the weekend. I don't necessarily mean winning. I mean, it's going to be difficult against Belfast, but we need to see 120 minutes of really competitive hockey to get the fans back on side.
You say, like, of course, like, you've brought it up, the fact that it was a disappointing night for you guys against Brayhead, and not to bring up another night of double figures conceding, but Tony Hant night, the game against the Dundee Stars, the 11-9, that was a crazy match in itself.
It was. We were obviously going for the 9-all tie for nostalgia's sake.
Yeah.
Backfired us, and, you know, Dundee just weren't playing. No, it wasn't so bad, because with Tony Hand playing, it was all about nostalgia that night. We had the mock racers tops on. It was just like a game, you know. Murrayfield hadn't changed since 1986, so you know, it just felt like a game from the old racers era, and it was quite fitting that it was this wild shootout. And it was just unfortunate the Edinburgh came out the wrong end of it, but I think it has affected us, because, or Edinburgh I should say, because they were 8-5 up in that game and kind of threw it away. And then to lose another double-digit game, you know, just a few games later, that's going to take its toll on the players.
How do you feel that considering the changes that have taken place, the profile of the Edinburgh Capitals within the city, has it gained any, or is there still a lot of work to do?
There's still, off the ice, there's still a lot of work to do. I mean, I've chatted to Scott Neal about that, and he was saying this summer they really put, you know, they've got limited resources, and they put all they can this year into just trying to get a product that is worth watching. And that's really what we've focused in. And they've actually had nothing left for advertising or anything like that. So there's still a lot of work to be done off the ice. But if this team can hold the form together, keep doing really well at home, I mean, I've been all doom and gloom, but we have won 9 out of our last 12 home games. So, you know, so if we can keep that kind of form up and the fans keep coming in, the team will grow, but there is a lot of work to be done. I mean, if you look at how well Manchester have done this year off the ice, they've been done a phenomenal job and shown what can be done in a ridiculously short amount of time. So, you know, there's a lot of work for Edinburgh to be doing off the ice.
As you say, you know, at home you're a formidable force. And the fact is you've taken a lot of, let's say, big scalps over the last number of weeks of guys coming in there. The Giants in this weekend, are you expecting more of the same?
Well, that's, I mean, yes. I mean, last week I would have said to you, we'd be disappointed if we couldn't split the series with you, you know. It's always going to be very difficult, but we would hope that we'd give you a good game in Edinburgh and perhaps nick one. But now, the fans are just really hopeful to have two competitive games and at least, you know, even two defeats, as long as we play with a bit of heart, and I think fans will be happy. But we should. With the team we've got, we'll get Paul Zanet back this week, which he's a big player for us. He's a quite good defensive forward as well, which is what we'll be missing. So we should be giving you a good game, and hopefully Edinburgh Capitals fans will think we could maybe nick one.
Thanks to Ross. Aaron, Riley Emerson put up with a few mid-season changes, as Ross mentioned there. They're able to take a scalp. We've seen that with regards to Nottingham, Sheffield and the likes. What are you expecting, or what should the Belfast Giants be expecting as they travel to Murrayfield on Saturday?
I think more of the same. I mean, we've been over there already earlier in the year. And as you say, there are a few changes, but you know, it's going to be a battle. The Caps have made that rink an absolute fortress this year, albeit there's been a few little glitches in the last few weeks, which maybe give us just that little bit more hope. Again, we talked about it earlier in the show tonight. I think if the Giants can go in there and maybe pick up, if they go 500, if they can win one, I think, win one and lose one, I think would be a decent weekend.
That's our form of late, though, mate. That's what we've been doing more or less week in, week out. Is that really what we should be aiming? Is that really a good return?
I think with the way the league, a great return would be to win both, obviously. And to take this as two wins going into our sort of our Christmas period. I think, you know, this next few weeks is going to be absolutely crucial, not just for us, but for everyone in the league, with the way the schedule's set out. But I think we'll have to be realistic, though. You know, it used to be that you would go to Edinburgh and you expect 4 points. Edinburgh aren't that team anymore. So I think we'll have to be realistic and anticipate that there's a strong possibility that the Caps are going to take something off us.
Davey Aaron says a 50% return from the weekend. Do you agree?
No, I kind of disagree. History's on our side there. You know, we've been 36 times to Murrayfield and we've won 32 times there. So, you know, but statistics are on our side. I think we have a better roster. I think we have better goaltending. And there's a bit of, you know, up and down from the Caps at the minute. They're looking how they fit Lukasevic into the team. They've got, you know, but they've got good scoring in Ryan Hayes. They've got good secondary scoring in the likes of Zanet and Rutherford. And they've a team that need respected, but if we can get our four lines out there and rolling, or even three strong lines with the likes of Boxy, you know, coming in there and putting in some tremendous shifts as he did last weekend. He's a real go-to guy at the minute. He brings a lot of energy and a lot of skill. And, you know, if we can get those sort of 10 forwards rolling really, really well and powerful, we are a dangerous side. We have to go and get in front of Chewback. We have to get shots above his blocker and we have to get pucks behind him. And if we can do that early, a bit like Manchester, Edinburgh don't chase down as well as the lead. So we've got to be defensively responsible. We've got to be disciplined and stay out of the box, win the penalty battle. And, you know, I think the better roster will take the two wins.
Any memories of these Christmas trips to Edinburgh, Aaron? Again after it. Yes, that's the answer I was looking for. David, did you ever make it over for the Christmas trip to Edinburgh?
Did indeed.
Yes. Oh, you know, that's right. You're not allowed to drink in the arena.
Really?
Apparently so.
That was my first trip to Scotland then. I didn't know.
Always good. Listen, I
remember Reggie Dunlop as his KOTG moniker was. I can't remember what his real name was. I assume it wasn't Reggie Dunlop, trying to get those beers off me as I tried to hose them down quickly. But good times, mate. That was me, Dr. Love, and Big Hitter had quite a night in Edinburgh that night, let me tell you.
One of the great memories, of course, of Edinburgh is the Shields of Scotland song, which is the greatest song that's ever been written.
Don't tell it to Marty McAllister. I've got some great memories of those weekends. I'm glad to see them back, especially when we all had goalie masks on.
I have to say, I think That was not the first Hands Up for Hansen happened in Edinburgh, didn't it?
Something along the lines of that, yeah. It was always good times. Good to have them. Hopefully, unfortunately, I'm not going to make it up this weekend, but hopefully I'll be back again next year and I'll be able to get up for that. If you want to watch it, if you're not going over for the weekend, Caps TV webcast will put the details on at AVFTB. Any other business, gents?
I suppose if I can jump in, just give a wee bit of an update. Last week, obviously, the coach took a very, very harsh decision by Dots to fine him £100 for his comments on A View from the Bridge after the game. And we felt sort of partially responsible for putting that audio out. And we thought we'd try and take a bit of heat off the coach and sort of our intention was never to pay the fine, but it was to take a bit of heat off him and raise a bit of money for charity, which was kind of, the coach was magnanimous enough to say anything he's raised, give the needy cause. So I've been speaking to the coach today. Coach Walser, we've raised £300. We're going to split it three ways. Coach Walser would like £100 to go to the Cool FM Cash for Kids that they're doing the collection for Christmas for needy kids in Northern Ireland there that are living in bad situations, get them some toys, get them some clothes or whatever for Christmas. So we send £100 there. The captain, Adam Keefe, we spoke to Keefe, £100 is going to go to Autism Northern Ireland. And the other £100, former Giants D-man, James Hutchison's father, is pretty ill with cancer. He's getting chemo, radiotherapy and stuff, and he's got a bit of a Just Giving page going there. So we always remember all former Giants, and we'll be rounding his fund up to £1,000. They're just less than £900 at the minute, so we'll be rounding that up to £1,000. And we'd like to thank everybody that donated last week. We're going to do the draw probably next Wednesday on Giants Live TV when I'm over in Belfast. We'll get that draw done with the coach, or maybe we can get Brixie to organise it before then. I'm sure we'll have a plastic bag or something lying about. We can do the draw. And
I'll bring the pool balls.
Well, okay. And on that bombshell,
A massive credit to the Belfast Giants fans who rallied around and turned what was a negative into a significant positive. It's a real credit to the organisation. It's a real credit to the fans. It's a real credit to us that we're able to basically raise this money, especially at Christmas time when these charities are crying out for people to help them out. So well done to everybody. And on that, many thanks to Ross Dewar and Seth Bennett for their time. Thanks for you guys for your three-word weekends and your fan agendas. Keep them coming. And Mr. McGimsey and Mr. Kernan, always a pleasure to chat with you.
Speak to you next week, man.
Speak to you later.
The weekend, this the games this weekend, of course, 5:30 on Saturday and 5:30 on Sunday. Keep on at AVFTB for details of the webcast. And wherever you are this weekend, we hope you enjoy your hockey. And we'll catch you here next time on A View from the Bridge.